Welcome to the message podcast of Catalyst Baptist Church, a vibrant church with two campuses located west of Melbourne, Australia. Dedicated to creating a welcoming and safe space for everyone to explore and grow their faith in God, our vision is to see hope multiplied within our community and around the world. We hope this podcast serves as a source of encouragement and spiritual growth for you. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to journeying with you in faith.
Good morning again, Catalyst. It is a great joy and honor that I have this morning to introduce you to our speaker. Jason Perkins is the director of the Irresistible Church Network Australasia, which is a big deal. I met Jason a couple of years ago, and he's been messing around in my life ever since. And it's been, it's been painful, actually, because we have a very similar background and a lot of stuff that we resonate with each other on. So it's just been a joy and privileged journey with him. And Jason, as part of his ministry, also speaks into emotionally healthy discipleship. He's actually the leading voice in Australia on this thing called Soul Care. And that's why I've asked him to come and speak today, because in this series, Are You For Real? Today we're going to be talking about, are we for real on the inside in our soul? And he's going to help us do that. He's going to help us live better. Come on up here, Jason. Jason is married to Kristen. She's with him down the front here. She's a counselor. So they both work together in this space. And I'm telling you, your world is about to get blessed and challenged. And hopefully, you're going to be inspired to take the next step in your faith journey. Jason, welcome.
Thank you, mate. I'd love to get a couple of housekeeping things out of the way before we get started, if that's okay. I want to just relieve you of trying to figure out where I'm from right out of the gate, okay? So I was born in Adelaide, but raised by American parents, and I've traveled back and forth to the US and Australia my whole life. I'm a dual citizen. And so my wife says I have the Russell Crowe version of the Australian accent, which simply means you're an Aussie that's just spent way too much time overseas, is all that means. So that'll help kind of ease anybody's trying to figure out where I'm from originally. The other thing I want to do as a housekeeping item, just bear with me for a moment. In the church world, and if you're not like used to the church world, maybe you're here for the first time or first time in a long time, oftentimes something happens when they invite a guest speaker to come to a church and they strap one of these things to the person's head, and then they put them up on one of these platforms. People out in the rows or watching online think way more highly of the person up here than they ought to. The truth is this: I'm just another bloke who wakes up every day trying to figure out what following Jesus looks like. That's it. And I'm just hopeful, super thankful, that Jesus, every morning when I wake up, it's like he just reminds me that he's been up all night waiting for me to wake up because he just wants to hang out with me. And I'm hoping today that maybe something he's teaching me or has taught me in the past might be helpful for you. And that's all. So please don't think any more highly of me than you ought to. The truth is, Catalyst has been a part of this series that we're calling Are You For Real for a few weeks now. This is part four of the series. And so if you're new to church or you're kind of catching up on church over the last few weeks, it's a bit like entering into a Netflix series, like in few episodes have already happened. I don't know if you're like me. My wife hates it, but I'm always like asking questions about the characters in the series or in the film. And she's like, just go back and watch the other episodes. You can get caught up. The truth is, this is kind of similar. If you haven't been a part of this Are You For Real series, you can go to the Catalyst YouTube channel, or you can go to the website, or you can even tap that QR code on the back of your seat in front of you, and you can check out the app. In fact, I think we've got a little slide here of the app that will tell you a little bit more about how you can access message notes and previous messages, even the Bible app. I would highly encourage you to check all of those things out, because it'll help you to catch up on what we've been talking about in the series. One last thing about the series. Good news, I'm just a guest speaker that's here for today. So if you hate today, good news, I won't be here next Sunday. It'll be back to regular scheduled programming. Stan will be back on. In fact, not just back on, he's going to be coming with real gusto because he's wrapping things up, casting vision, all sorts of stuff. You won't want to miss out on that, and that's all happening next week. Enough about me. I'd love to learn a bit about you this morning. So would you do me a favor, just participate in a quick survey with me by just raising your hand. I want you to answer this first question so I can get to know you as an audience a little bit better. If you're watching online, just throw up like a hand emoji or a thumbs up or whatever. Here's the question, first question. Have you ever been on an airplane before? Raise your hand, okay? Yep, looking around the room. Looks like just about every person in the room has been on an airplane. That's awesome, great, you can put your hands down. Now, I wanna find out what type of person you are on a plane. Are you the kind of person that when you get on the plane, you immediately put in your AirPods, or maybe even before you get on the plane, you put your headphones on because you don't want to talk to anybody else on the plane? Is that you? Raise your hand up nice and high. Don't be ashamed. You can say, yep, that's me. I don't want to talk to anybody. That's great. All right. Or put your hands down. Are you like me who loves to talk to everybody that they sit next to on the plane or line up with on the plane? Raise your hand. Okay. You got questions for people. That's great. Raise your hand if you just refuse to raise your hand in church. Just raise your hand, okay? A couple of people down the front here. See what I did there? You put your hand up in church, but that's okay. I grew up in a church kind of scenario background where people got nervous when people started raising their hands in church. It was like a slippery slope. And some of you are brand new to church and you just saw people singing songs and they had like one hand up, like they had a question about the song they were just singing. Some people had two hands up, like they got two questions, but they seemed like they really knew what they were singing about, yet they still have questions. I'm not sure how that works. Here's the deal. No matter what you're like on an airplane, if you see me on a plane and you don't want to talk to anybody, make sure you get your headphones on. Because I have the same question that I ask of people that I sit next to every single time I fly. I just did it a week ago on the flight from Brisbane down to Melbourne. I asked this question right here. Are you coming or going? That's my question. That's my go-to. Sometimes I mix it up a little bit. I'm a child of like the 90s. I was in high school in the 90s. So sometimes I say, are you going home or away? That was like my favorite show when I was a kid. So are you going home or away? And the thing that I love about this question, are you coming or going, is the answer leads to more questions. So if they're going somewhere, I'm like, oh, what are you going there for? You're going to Melbourne. Great. What are you going to be doing in Melbourne? Oh, I'm going home. Where do you live in Melbourne? So many great questions can come out of this one question. Here's the question I get asked in return almost every single time. I'm going to go out and say every time I get asked the same question, here's the question, what do you do? And then when I explain to people what I do, like I'm a pastor to pastors, like I lead a network of churches that are all trying to create churches that even people that don't normally go to church would love to engage with. That's one of my favorite things about Catalyst, is I love the fact that no matter where you are on your faith journey here today, they're creating a safe place for everybody on their journey. I love that. So I start explaining that, and then I watch the look on people's faces. I love this. I know exactly what's happening. They're scanning the conversation that we've just had up until this point, wondering, have I dropped an F-bomb? Or have I said something I shouldn't have said? And I try to ease their kind of pain and say, listen, I work with like charities and not-for-profits, but they eventually figure out, oh, you're like a pastor, you're like a priest in my kind of world, and they're wondering about this conversation. But this question, what do you do? I think it actually exposes something in our culture and our society today that's really important for us to identify, especially as followers of Jesus. We live in what I refer to as an extremely externally focused culture. People are all about these three things. What do you do? What do you have? And what do people think or say about us? That's the kind of culture that we live in today, an extremely, I would say extremely externally focused culture. And it rubs off on us. No matter whether you would call yourself a church person, not a church person, follower of Jesus for a long time, still trying to figure out what that even means, it all rubs off on us. And here's what happens. Because of this externally focused culture that we live in today, we end up living out this kind of formula that I've described in this way. Here's my formula. We tend to do more so that we can have more, so that people might think more of us and maybe even say more about us. And this is where it gets really crazy, okay? Full transparency. This is like my group therapy this morning. So thank you for coming to my group therapy. It's not even lunchtime yet, and you're having to sit through this. Here's where it gets crazy. This is my story. I don't know if you resonate with this. I tend to sometimes do more so that I can have more, so people I don't even know or like might think more of me and say more about me. Let's be honest. We do more so we can have more. Somebody might notice that holiday we went on. Somebody might notice that car that we drive. You don't even know these people. I don't even know these people. Sometimes it's people I don't even like. And I'm living in this formula of doing more so I can have more so people might think more of me. Now, if you're not a church person, wouldn't consider yourself a religious person, I don't know how you stumbled online to this link and you're watching along, or maybe somebody invited you to come to church today and they told you there's some really cute girls that go to this church, you should probably come along. Or maybe they promised you a free lunch. I don't know how you landed here. But I want to give you a pass just for a couple of minutes to kind of check out of the conversation. I want to talk to all the kind of church people in the room. If you consider yourself a follower of Jesus and a church person, I want to get real. This is the Are You For Real series. I want to get real this morning. Maybe even step on a couple of toes, okay? So if you're not a church person, I'll let you know when we've finished our little private conversation. And you can check back in. Church people, religious people, we take this formula, if we're honest, and we religiously complicate it. We begin to take this formula and we apply it to our relationship with God. Have you ever done this? If I do more for God, then perhaps I'll have a better relationship with God, and perhaps he'll think more highly of me or even say more about me. You ever done that? Nobody would say that's the way to have a relationship with God. Nobody would strap a microphone to their face, come up on a platform and say, hey, let me teach you about how to have a really healthy, great relationship with God. Here's how it works. If you do more for him, then you'll have a better relationship with him, and then he'll think more highly of you. We would never teach that. I would never teach that. But yet, full disclosure, for probably the first 15 to 20 years of my life in ministry, my ministry and leadership, this was the formula that I kind of lived out. And you know what? Little secret, it works for a period of time, especially in church world. This is probably the last time Stan's going to ever invite me to speak at Catalyst Church. But let me let you in on a little secret. Church leaders love these kinds of people. Because if you do more for God, guess what? They're going to notice, and they're going to invite you to have more opportunities to do more for God. And they're going to think more highly of you. And they're going to say great things about you. In fact, my story is it's led me all over the world. Eventually, it led my wife and I, in the middle of the 20 teens, to pastor a church in Colorado Springs. This little kid from Australia, what the heck is he doing over in the States, pastoring a church? You do more for God, people will notice, you'll have more opportunities to do more for God, and people will think more highly of you. And it works for a period of time. Right up until when I was working at this church in Colorado Springs, they had brought me in to lead this church because the church had kind of plateaued. It had flatlined. It wasn't growing like it once used to. And the leadership of the church brought me in because I was the growth guy. Remember, I had done a lot for God, getting more opportunities to do more for him, and things tended to grow externally. The church was growing. Everything on the outside looked up and to the right. It was an amazing time. Church had like tripled in attendance, quadrupled in financial giving and generosity. We had launched a citywide gospel movement called 'Cause I Love You. Over 100 churches in our city, all unified together in loving the city of Colorado Springs with no strings attached. Everything externally looked great. But what people didn't know is that internally, my soul was being crushed. My wife knew, In fact, I remember one evening we were walking around my neighborhood and I was complaining to Kristen, I was ranting, eventually got back around to our house and I was standing in front of my next door neighbor's house. I was so frustrated with God that I actually took my glasses off, I snapped them in half, and I threw them down on my neighbor's driveway. And I said to Kristen, if this is what ministry is going to be like, I want nothing to do with it. My wife very wisely looked at me with her finger. She oftentimes uses her finger. And she said, Jason, you need help. And then she followed up with, and I can't give it to you. I eventually reached out to some friends of mine and explained what I was going through, and they introduced me to a guy named Lance Witt, who's become a friend, a mentor, a guy that I do a lot of ministry and leadership stuff with now today. And Lance introduced me to this concept of soul care. Stan mentioned it earlier. And I love Lance's definition of soul care. This is the way Lance describes it. Lance says it's tending to the garden of your inner life. See, for most of my life in leadership, I was focused on harvesting the forest of my external life. I knew how to raise money. I knew how to grow teams. I knew how to recruit people. I'd been in the business world for a number of years, almost a decade, and growing a tech company. I knew how to do all those kinds of things. Very good at harvesting the forest of my external life, clueless when it came to tending to the garden of my inner life. And here's a simple truth that I discovered, simple but powerful truth during this season of my life. Here's the truth that I discovered, that the health of your internal life eventually will be revealed in your external life. It'll come out. And the truth is, those that you love the most will probably get your worst. Let me say that again. The people you love the most, when the internal health comes out externally, the people you love the most will probably get your worst. And so it was during this season that I began to identify some of the things that I had been living out of and unhealthy practices that had just become a part of my life as a follower of Jesus. Here's Perko's top five unhealthy practices. Here they are. Number one, I would avoid pain and tension by staying busy for God. Number two, I was ignorant of most of my feelings and emotions. First time I ever went to a counselor, he asked me that classic counselor question. You ever been to a counselor? You tell them your story, and their response is, so how did that make you feel? Like punching you in the face is what I wanted to say to him, but I didn't. I said, I'm frustrated. I'm angry. That's why I came to you. He introduced me to this thing called the emotions wheel, the feeling wheel. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those. I had three feelings that I knew of at the time. Frustrated, angry, good. Those were my three. First time in my life, looking at that feelings and emotions wheel, that I was actually able to say, I don't feel frustrated. I actually feel betrayed. I'd never articulated that in my life. Completely oblivious to my feelings and emotions and what was going on inside of my life. Number three, I was leading and living with no limits at all. I thought every single opportunity that came my way was an invitation from God. I had no idea about discerning, is it just an opportunity or is this actually God inviting me into something? I was accepting every opportunity as if it was an invitation from God. Number four, I was doing a lot for God, but not spending much time, if any time, just being with him. And then finally, number five, I was completely unaware. I was ignorant of this idea of FUI. My wife calls it FUI. It simply stands for Family of Origin Impacts Everything. I didn't see how all of my leadership and my life at that time was impacted by the way I had been raised and the way I'd been formed in life and leadership. I just wasn't aware of those things. So I'd love for you to turn to your neighbor now and tell them which of those five you think. No, I'm just kidding. This is not group therapy. This is just Perko's therapy, okay? You just get to listen in on it. It's a lot of fun. During that season, there was a story from the life of Jesus that really stood out to me that I want to share with you this morning and give you a couple of practical examples of what you can do from this story. And here's the story. It comes from the book of Luke, one of the first four books of the New Testament. If you're not familiar with the Bible, there's two halves to it. There's an Old Testament and a New Testament. First half is how God kind of dealt with the nation of Israel, the Jewish people. Second half is where Jesus shows up on the scene. And great news for us, we have four accounts of the life of Jesus told from four different perspectives: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And Luke, in this particular story, is the one that we're going to listen to and learn from today. Here's what Luke says at the beginning of this story. He says this: as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. Some of you already are like, oh, I know the story. Be careful. Familiarity oftentimes breeds contempt. We just gloss over things. We don't pay attention to what's happening in the story. Don't let that be the case with this story this morning. In fact, ask God right now, even if you're not sure he exists, God, what is it that you want to teach me from this story today? What do you want me to notice from this story? So Jesus and his disciples were traveling. They come to the home of this lady named Martha. And then Luke gives us a little bit of detail. I love the detail that Luke gives us. He says that she had a sister. Her name was Mary. And then notice what Luke says she was doing. I love this detail. Her sister Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet, just sitting at the rabbi's feet. Now, to give you a little context, in the first century, Jesus was a rabbi, and so he would travel and teach. Oftentimes show up in a village or in people's homes or in the synagogue, and he would teach. Most people, though, when they would come to listen to the rabbi, they really wanted the seat either on his left or on his right. Some of you are like, oh yeah, I know that story. People fought over who got to sit on his left and on his right. Because, you know, if somebody took a photo and posted it on Instagram and tagged that Jesus rabbi, you'd be in the photo. Like, that's a great spot. But not Mary. Don't miss this. This is huge. Notice where Mary is sitting. More importantly, notice what she's doing. Listening. Most of us, when we come to Jesus, we do a lot of the talking. Not Mary, sitting at the feet of the rabbi, listening to what the teacher had to say. The story continues. Luke goes on to tell us that while Mary was doing that, Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. Before you go, oh, pointing the finger at Martha, because I tend to do that. I'm like, Martha, what were you doing? Look at Mary, she's so good. What are you doing? If I'm being honest, I sometimes have to put my name in the story and remind myself, but Perko was distracted by all the ministry that had to be done, by all the volunteers that needed to be recruited, by all the messages that needed to be preached, by all the money that needed to be raised. Fill in the blank. Perko was distracted by all the ministry that had to be done. And then Luke records for us, not only was she distracted, Martha, she had a lot of, I think what they call in the Jewish world, chutzpah. She had a lot of guts, a lot of mojo. Notice what she says. She came to him, the rabbi, said, don't you care? I don't know if you've ever spoken to Jesus like this, but Martha had guts. Don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? And then Martha doubles down. Tell her to help me. Tell her to get off her butt and come and help me. Now, watch the response of the rabbi. Don't miss the tone and the posture of how Jesus responds. Especially if you're brand new to following Jesus or you're considering following Jesus. Don't miss this. He's the most kind and gentle and compassionate teacher and leader you'll ever meet. He's so kind. Here's how he responds. Martha, Martha. Gentle, compassionate. I kind of imagine Luke didn't have enough room. Maybe there were more than just two Marthas. Maybe it was more like Martha, 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 Martha. you are worried and upset about so many things. But few things are needed. Then Jesus doubles down. Indeed, only one thing is really needed. And then the kicker line. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, don't get confused. Mary hasn't chosen the only thing that's important. This is a priority lesson that Jesus is giving. Here's how I kind of write it. If I were to put it on a whiteboard, I'd put it like this. Being with Jesus is greater than doing for Jesus. Doing for Jesus is important, but let's not get them out of priority. Being with him is greater than just doing for him. So what does that look like practically in 2026? Let's be honest. We don't have Jesus showing up at your sister's house to sit at his feet physically. What does it look like to practically follow Jesus in this way in 2026? Jesus extended an invitation to the first followers that he had in the first century, and I think the invitation is the same for all of us today. In fact, I would say it's not just for followers of Jesus. This is an invitation to anybody. Here's the invitation Jesus gave. He says, are you tired? Anybody tired in the room already? Only a few weeks into 2026 and we're already tired. Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion, maybe? Come to me, Jesus says. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. And then look at these three things that he says. Walk with me, work with me, and watch how I do it. What's it? Do what? Watch how I do life. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. I don't know about you. I haven't described life recently as freely or lightly. Sometimes it feels heavy and hard. But Jesus' invitation to all of us, follower of him or not yet, is to come and learn how to live freely and lightly. So what does that look like, practically speaking? I think it looks a lot like what some of you may be already familiar with. Some of you may be actually in the middle of something like this. It's this idea called apprenticeship. When you do an apprenticeship with somebody, you don't just learn how to do the trade. You actually learn how to do life with them. Like you learn when they take a break. You learn that smoko is at this time and you take an afternoon tea at this time. Like you're not just learning how to do the work, you're learning how to do life with them. That's what Jesus' invitation is. It's an invitation to learn how to do life together with him. So how did Jesus live? I want to give you two simple what I call keystone habits that I've noticed from the life of Jesus. Keystone habit is one that kind of trickles down into every aspect of your life. There are two keystone habits that I watch Jesus do, not just weekly, but some of them daily. And I want to invite you to consider maybe picking up one or both of these habits in 2026. Here's the first one. Jesus prioritized this idea of silence and solitude all throughout his day. Even in the midst of a busy schedule, even in the midst of ministry, you'll notice that Jesus would pull away from the busy demands of his life and get alone with his Father. You see it over and over again. In all four accounts of Jesus' life, you see him pulling away to get time alone in silence and solitude just to be with his Father. I'm going to share these with the church, and they're going to put them out on the website so that you can get access to these. But I've created a couple of simple little cards that you can print off. You can put them in your Bible. Just simple steps on how to practice solace, silence and solitude in your life throughout your week. You can build rhythms throughout your day, a morning time, afternoon time, an evening time. Just a simple, maybe a minute or 2 minutes to begin with, of just pulling away for some times of silence and solitude with Jesus. The second thing that Jesus prioritized, not only silence and solitude, he prioritized this idea of a weekly Sabbath where he just paused for a full 24 hours. He stopped any paid or unpaid work just to rest. And some of you maybe grew up in kind of church systems where Sabbath was a bit legalistic and you were forced not to do certain things on a Sabbath. Some of you maybe just grew up like I did and you weren't even told that it was part of the Christian experience. That's just something that Jewish people do. So what is it that you do on a Sabbath? Well, first of all, let me just explain that Jesus took the Sabbath, and in the first century, he changed the Sabbath from something that you must do or have to or ought to do into something that you get to do. He said it this way, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It's a gift. So you may ask the question, Superco, what do you do on a Sabbath? Do you just sit, you know, by the window and get your cup of tea and hum kumbaya out the window all day for 24 hours? Anybody that knows me, you're probably picking up on this even from this short time we've had together, I'm not a kumbaya with a cup of tea by the window kind of guy. Not for 24 hours. So let me explain to you specifically, I want to get really practical. Very practical, four steps that you can implement into your life that would help you to implement this idea of a habit of Sabbath each week. First step is simply to do this, just to stop. Stop any paid or unpaid work, which is tricky for some very kind of driven people. Easy for me to say, oh, I'm not going into the office for a whole day. Yeah, sure, I've stopped my paid work. But have you seen my backyard? Like, there's a lot of stuff to do around my house. So I actually started, before I went to a full 24 hours, I stopped any paid or unpaid work just for a three-hour period, just to begin with. And then the second thing that I did was I rested. Stopped any paid or unpaid work, and I would just rest. Now, rest looks different for every single person. Rest for my wife looks very different for rest to me. And so the third step is actually a part of the rest. The third step is to delight. And each of you are uniquely wired to delight in different ways. One of the things that I love to do, I find it incredibly replenishing on Sabbath, and I find incredible delight in it, is watching live sports. And I'm not talking about like turn the TV on and watch it. I'm talking about like going to the event and getting to experience and watch it. My wife, that is not on her replenishment cycle. She would say, probably shoot me now. She loves taking care of our beautiful indoor plants, which is not on my replenishment cycle, not restful at all. So each person is going to delight and rest uniquely to them. One of the geniuses of how God has wired us each individually. And then finally, the last step is to contemplate. To simply contemplate God's goodness in your life. When I think of silence and solitude and I think of Sabbath, I actually describe them this way. Silence and solitude is like sunlight for your soul. Tending to the garden of your inner life, silence and solitude is like sunlight. Sabbath is like water for your soul. Your soul needs both to really thrive. So I want to invite you to imagine for a moment. Imagine your life not just focused on the external things. I know all of you are probably very good at harvesting the forest of your external life. But what would it look like in 2026 to prioritize the same things that Jesus prioritized, these ideas of silence and solitude and Sabbath, to tend to the garden of your inner life? I've invited Tim and the band to come, and they're going to sing for us again this song that we sang a little bit earlier. Christ is my firm foundation, the rock on which I stand. I absolutely believe that you can build your life, the way you live the rhythms of your life, based upon the way that Jesus built his life while he was here on earth. But there are a couple of lines in that song that I just want to call out. A couple of lines in that song that maybe were a challenge for you as you were singing them. They were a challenge for me. One of the lines in the song that was challenging for me was this idea that he's never let me down. Do you remember that line? And then we said that he's never failed. He won't start failing now. He won't fail. The truth is, as I look at my life, there have been times when I felt like God had failed me. Truthfully, there are times when I felt like Jesus had let me down. But there's another line in this song as we sing it. I hope you don't miss this. It says, he's faithful through generations. Oftentimes, I think so small. I think Jesus let me down or he failed me in the moment. But as I look at my life through the generations, he's been faithful every single time. And he'll be faithful to you, I believe, as you begin to build your life, not just on the person of Jesus, but the way that Jesus lived his life as well. Let me finish by sharing with you my favorite quote from one of my favorite authors, a guy named Henry Now, and he says it this way, that spiritual identity means we are not what we do, we are not what we have, and we are certainly not what people say or think about us. We are beloved daughters and sons of God, full stop. So let me pray for you this morning and ask that God would just implant these truths into your heart. Father, I ask that each person in this room would be reminded that they are beloved daughters and sons of God today. Not because of what they do or what they have or what other people think or say about them, but because they are beloved by you, full stop. God, I pray that you would give each of us the wisdom to know what to do with what we've heard today. And then would you give us, God, the courage to go and actually do that thing you're inviting us to do. I pray this in Jesus' precious name. Amen.